is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 8th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on what is a cooler Monday afternoon. A little overcast out there, but another victory Monday for the Auburn Tigers as Hugh Freeze and the boys are 2-0 to start the 2025 season. We're talking about that today. We're talking week two of college football today. Maybe a little NFL sprinkled in there as well, and a whole lot more. Christian, happy Monday, sir. How are you, brother?
Happy Monday. Yeah, you mentioned it. We call these shows Victory Monday episodes, and it had been a while since you could have one, if not back-to-back, Victory Mondays, but we're here. 2-0, a 42-3, many call it a 42-0 victory over the Ball State Cardinals on Saturday night inside Jordan-Hare. We're diving in to that game, given our kind of generic thoughts. Again, we'll dive more into this as the week goes, but then we got some news along future games. We have a new time slot now for Auburn and Oklahoma before we dive into our giant recap of college football week two at 2:30. Jacob, another nice week for you, sir.
I did have a nice week in a week that was a little tough.
Yeah,
it was a little tough.
I went 1-2 on picks that I did not truly believe, but you picked otherwise, and me trying to play catch up, which might not be smart in week two. It feels like I'm point chasing already, which almost got the Bills last night for trying to go for 2-point conversions in the third quarter. But what a game that ended up being.
What a wild game that was.
And then in hour number two, we're talking about the AP poll and some great news on the Auburn side of things, of how they're ranked for the first time since 2021 in the AP top 25. But man, do I have a Monday rant for you. And it's not even something new, because it's the same thing that we've been preaching on this show ever since I joined full-time, and you're seeing it pick up a little bit of steam as well. But it's just how dumb it is, how pointless it is. And now comparing week one rankings to week two rankings, again, nothing on the Auburn side of things, because the unanimous opinion is, oh, yeah, okay, finally, yep, Auburn's 24th.
Cool.
Good job.
Yeah.
That's it. But there's about 8 or 9 other teams in there, whether they're ranked in general, where they're ranked, or why they're as highly ranked as they are. A big-time rant coming to start hour number two, but a good rant. It'll feel good coming off the chest. But again, on
it'll
a
feel
victory,
good for you.
It'll feel great. It will feel great for myself to let this off. But again, it is a Victory Monday episode, and you feel like you can only be so upset when your team is 2-0.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And we want to hear from you on this Monday afternoon. Give us a call. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. How are you feeling about Auburn being 2-0? How do you feel about the Tigers' performance against Ball State on Saturday night under the lights in Jordan-Hare? Whether you were there, listening on the radio, sitting outside the stadium, however you were able to take in the game, how do you feel about the 42-3 victory over Ball State? You can give us a call, 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. I believe head coach Hugh Freeze is just wrapping up his weekly press conference. That was at 1:30 today, so unfortunately, we were not able to be there. But I am excited to go back and listen to that and hear what he had to say But we did get to hear him talk on Saturday, Christian, after the game in the post-game press conference at Jordan-Hare, and he was pleased. He was happy with what he saw and how his team performed, because while 42-3 is a nice win, it's not 70-3 or 70-6 or 70-0 like we saw Ohio State or Oregon or Alabama do. But when you dive into the numbers, take about 30 seconds.
That's all you need.
And just dive into the numbers really quick. Auburn absolutely dominated this game. And that's such an overused word sometimes. I would love to find a synonym for that, or even a more exaggerated term than dominated, because that's exactly what Auburn did against Ball State. So much so, it's breaking records. I mean, this was historically one of the most lopsided college football games that's probably ever been played.
Do you still have the little graphic that we saw on Saturday night on social media? It's this guy that does...
Yes, hold on. Let me go find it.
It's games that were dominated based off of or looking beyond the actual scoreboard. And you saw so many of these that kind of fluttered and slowly began to make their way up slowly. And then there's Auburn. That's a crazy outlier that said of all the Power Four teams that played, the Auburn Ball State game was the largest, again, dominant victory, although the scoreboard only said 42-3.
I gotta go find it. I forget.
I tried
who posted.
Finding it it's this a, morning and I couldn't do it.
I forget who posted. I'll see it when it pops back up on my feed. But yeah, they basically take a bunch of deep analytics, and it's the graphic is titled like, "Did my team really lose that bad?"
Yes.
Or something like that.
Or win by that much.
Right. And it's basically diving into the deep analytics of, okay, the score said one thing, but what do the stats say? What do the really hard numbers say? And out of all the blowout performances this weekend, which we saw a bunch of in week two, Auburn had the most defining, astounding, just... pure
again, throw that
win.
Synonym for dominance.
Whatever word right there, right? Auburn had the best win and the best performing win of any team in college football over this past weekend.
And almost doubled the next highest team.
Which was Alabama.
Yes. But there were games in there. Oregon and Oklahoma State. That game was towards the bottom of, yes, Oregon obviously dominated that game, but you clicked on the thread and it goes into all the little sub points of what this model is really, really showing you. And it's the top one was just how effectively or could you move the football versus how the defense or how their offense moved the defense on you. And it's so many weird different things that go into so much more than just a score or a cover or a spread or things like that. Auburn dominated this game on Saturday night. -3 rushing yards. If you include sack yardages, Auburn gave up 33 carries for -3 yards. That's dominant.
Yeah, Auburn outgains Ball State 495-68. Auburn passes for 271. Auburn runs for 224. That's pretty balanced, if you ask me. Auburn had just the one turnover. There were some things that we disliked, and we'll get to that here momentarily. Auburn had 27 first downs. You were 6 of 11 on third down. You moved the football with ease. Jackson Arnold looked really, really good. The receivers looked really, really good. The run game was good, even without Damari Alston. I thought the offensive line was okay. It was okay. You gave up way too many sacks, in my opinion. Jackson Arnold got sacked, I believe, 5 times in this football game, or maybe he got sacked 4 and Deuce got sacked 1 time, regardless. That's too many against Ball State. But just diving into the numbers here quickly, 24 of 28 for Jackson Arnold, 251 through the air, 3 touchdowns, no picks. This was what Jackson Arnold can do with his arm. There were so many people, Christian, so many people who were concerned that Jackson Arnold couldn't throw the football. All we heard all offseason was that these receivers were just going to dominate, right? And then you go to Baylor and Cam Coleman has one catch. Malcolm Simmons doesn't get involved. Perry Thompson didn't see the field. Eric Singleton
was alarms.
Fine. Hop, Auburn's a terrible passing offense. All they did was run the ball. This was the game you got to prove it. This was the coming out party that we figured it would be by design. And Auburn threw it all over the yard and made it look easy doing so.
They did so, and man, we sat up in the press box and watched this game, and the entire kind of vibe, or at least from the guys around us, were, man, the fact that this is a vanilla offense, you are not showing anything right now. Jackson Arnold's deepest completion, I believe, was 22 yards, and that was when Cam hurdled the cornerback to get a couple more, but that was still like an 8-yard completion if he didn't get yards after catch. They just took what the defense gave them. It was the six-yard hitch routes. Hugh Freeze talked about it in the post-game press conference, said, yeah, he went 24 of 28. He probably could have gone 30 for 30 if we really just tried to do that the entire way down the field. But obviously you wanted to try some other things. But the fact that Auburn ran a vanilla offense yet took care of business, mm-hmm. How refreshing is that to be able to say and to hear? Because how many times do you sit there, and we obviously have heard the word vanilla because Gus Malzahn was the best to ever do it on trying to show a team absolutely nothing and make it a game when you start the fourth quarter. Auburn didn't do anything in this game.
No.
Yet Jeremiah Cobb goes for 121 yards and 2 touchdowns. Shout out to him in his first career college start. He averages 7.2 yards per carry through 2 games this season.
Yeah. Looks really, really good. And between the tackles, nonetheless, yes. Which is
the biggest question mark of this season.
I refuse to believe that it could be done, and he has proven me wrong in the first 2 games.
And Jackson Arnold, again, 24 of 28, 251 yards and 3 touchdowns. Yet, if I didn't tell you those stats, you leave Jordan-Hare Stadium, or you wake up on a Sunday morning and go, yeah, I mean, it was a good game. Nothing too flashy. I mean, you know, it looked good. It looked how it should.
Yeah.
Look, you didn't have to go do anything sexy. You didn't have to do anything crazy. Jackson Arnold hit open receivers. And my goodness, we talked about it so many times. He hits receivers, man, before they turn around. Mm-hmm. The ball's out of his hand when the receiver is beginning that break or beginning that cut. You saw Cam Coleman come back and help Arnold out to come and make a grab in between a safety and a cornerback. You saw so many guys do so many good things, and nothing stands out when you look at this game on the successful side for the Auburn offense.
And nothing different than what you saw against Baylor in terms of the looks, right? And then in a game like this, right, Oklahoma might pull this game up just to see some of the routes and see some of the formations, but Auburn didn't recreate the wheel here. Auburn just, you said it, did what the defense gave you. They took it. And through the first 2 games of the season, Auburn has done just that, but in 2 different ways.
Yeah, and we're at the point right now of, like what you're saying, you can pull up tape to watch what they do against a team that can't stop the run. You watch up against a team when Auburn wants to throw the football. But it goes back to the topic of conversation. And if there was one bullet point that defined last season, it was how good 1-0 starts are versus 0-1 starts, especially against a P4 team that we'll talk about in just a little bit. There is no more chirping about whether this Baylor team is good anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all watched that game against SMU? I know you did.
Yep.
There's no more conversations about, man, well, that defense gave up 400 yards and gave up 24 points. Yeah, well, they went for 600 against SMU. And look at what SMU's defense allowed Baylor to do while SMU was out in front by 2 touchdowns. Wasn't there another team that was out in front by 2 touchdowns on them? Exactly. But the ability for Auburn to be 1-0 versus 0-1.
Against a good opponent.
Against a very, very good opponent, and not have to analyze this game to death. Not have to be over crucial or sit there and watch every single play. And we come on the radio today and say, well, Jackson Arnold looked like he actually could complete passes today. The run game looked like it actually worked. But then you have to sit in the back of your mind and build this false confidence of, yeah, but it was against Ball State. No, you've already seen this team overcome adversity and handle success and handle failure and handle it in a really positive way to where you can then go back and work. Auburn won the toss in the third. I guarantee we were talking about this in the press box with Daryl Daprich. Auburn won the coin toss, and everybody expected them to take the football and go score. Daryl said, I bet you know what, they're going to defer, which they did. And he said, I bet you it's because DJ Durkin and that defense was pissed off about how they played, and they want to go get a stop. Look at how the defense responded. And yes, I understand the quality of opponents, but look at what the defense did and how they looked for four quarters.
My comparison, and to kind of solidify or validify your argument here, is look at how last year went. Look at how last year started for Auburn, right? You're coming off of a 2023 season with Peyton Thorne that wasn't impressive by any means. And the idea was, okay, has he gotten better? Has the offense gotten better? Can Auburn move the football? Can Auburn score to start the 2024 season, right? You start with Alabama A&M. Do you remember what that game was? Do you remember what the score of that game ended up being? Auburn's season opener last year against Alabama A&M.
It was either 77-0 or 77-3.
73-3.
Okay.
Was the final score of Auburn's season opener last year, where the question marks were, is the offense fixed? Is Peyton Thorne the answer? Do you want to know what Peyton Thorne did in that football game?
Yeah, straight go balls.
He was 13 of 21, 322 yards, four touchdowns, no interceptions. Hank Brown got in that game and had two passing touchdowns.
Yeah.
Auburn puts up 451 passing yards on that team.
And you know what we came on the radio saying? Look.
Yeah.
Look at what it looked like.
We were like, oh, great. The offense looks pretty good. It is against Alabama A&M, but at least it looks good, right? Maybe this season's on track. Maybe 2024 is going to be a good year. Wrong. Because the very next week is when California came to town and the offense puts up 14 points. And then it was like, well, crap. We're back to where we started. And then the next game was New Mexico, where you put up 45 points. It was a weird game, but ultimately you put up 45 points. It's like, all right, so it's in there. We know it's capable, but is it capable against good opponents? Well, let's find out in game four against Arkansas. Nope. 14 points. How about Oklahoma? Nah. 21 points, and that's where the decision-making problems came in. How about Georgia? No. 13 points. How about Missouri? No. That was 17. Even a game against Kentucky, where you simply gave it to the best player in the SEC and he single-handedly beat that team, our offensive questions were not fixed. Vanderbilt, nope, you put up 7. You see where I'm going with this? It's validifying what you're saying, Christian, the idea that we're through two games and you can believe in the offense because they've done it against quality opponents, or a quality opponent, and then did a completely different way, or did it in a completely different way against an inferior opponent. Working on the things they didn't get to do in game one, they said, cool, we're going to do it in game two. And yet you still have questions, in a good way, about what this offense is capable of doing. What happens when Brent Venables, and you and I were talking about this Saturday night on the way home, it's like, okay, what happens when Brent Venables says, you know what, we're bringing 7, playing man-to-man on the outside. Can Auburn convert? Auburn execute?
Not going to let them run the football between the tackles, and we're not going to give up those 6-yard hitch routes. We're going to pressure Jackson Arnold to death and hope that he has to pick himself up off the ground after every single shotgun snap and throw it 30 yards over his receiver's head.
We're going to find out, but you at least have confidence, I do anyway, that Auburn can get it done however they have to do it offensively because they've done it one game before. And the defense has clearly proven that they're stacked. I don't know if I've ever seen a defense at Auburn that has this many dudes.
And it's somebody different every single game that you can hear.
Every play. It's
Sylvester Smith and Xavier Atkins, though, were the two in this game that you heard a lot of. And my goodness, did they point themselves out as future stars.
No doubt about it. And so that's what's exciting. That's why it feels different. By no means are we saying, oh, you beat Ball State, we're back. No. But you're 2-0. You're going into another week where we're going to get to South Alabama here in a minute and kind of start to look ahead. Of course, still talking more about Ball State, but the feeling is just so much different. It's so much different because it's not a false confidence. It's not a false hope.
My perfect example of that, we talked about it all week last week, of look at what Jordan-Hare Stadium is going to feel like on Saturday. I felt it.
Yeah.
Everybody there felt what Jordan-Hare back. And everybody sat there and said, okay, all right, this feels incredible. This feels like what Jordan-Hare should feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And the national media has kind of taken that and run with it as well in a very good way. Imagine if that was 0-1. You wouldn't have any of that inside Jordan-Hare. You'd have the people, but it would be because they already bought tickets and felt like they needed to go. It wouldn't be the pure energy, the pure excitement of watching this team play because they now have seen what this offense and this defense are capable of, and now you've seen it at home, and you get to again on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it was a good day inside of Jordan-Hare. Auburn looked good, and it was a fun day on the Plains. We continue talking about that right after this. We want to hear from you. Give us a call. Your thoughts on Auburn defeating Ball State, 334-321-1390. We're back after this, and we're just underway here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Talking Auburn versus Ball State as the Tigers get it done over the weekend. 42-3 was the score. We want to hear from you, 334-321-1390. Your thoughts on the Tigers being 2-0. Some teams can't say that in college football. So give us a call. We want to hear from you. Yep. Good, bad, ugly.
Never mind. Nope, it's saving for 3 o'clock. Nope.
No, go ahead.
No, it's got to
give them a little sneak peek. Give them a little sneak peek. Make them come back or just not turn the radio dial at all. Sneak peek.
Preseason expectations should not reflect your current rankings.
Boom.
It should not reflect what your number next to your name is right now just because that's what you were supposed to do or you're a big brand.
Send tweet. Boom. Come back at 3
that's
o'clock
all.
For more
yeah.
on that. Yes, so Auburn looked good on Saturday night. And again, the numbers say it was the most dominant victory of the weekend. Historically, one of the most dominating wins Auburn has ever had in its program history, not by a margin of score, but just the margin of stats, right? I don't think people are appreciating enough what Auburn's defense did Saturday. Do we understand that Ball State legitimately could not move the football? They couldn't do it. They could not move. Auburn's defense lit them up play after play after play. And you mentioned Sylvester Smith, who was great to see him get a good game in there, and Xavier Atkins, who was quiet in the first half of the Baylor game, started to make some plays down the stretch in that Baylor game, and then had his breakout moment on Saturday. I had a chance to ask Hugh Freeze about that first question of the presser. I said, hey man, Xavier Atkins played really well. Like, what'd you see from him? And he had great things to say. Said he was in there doing TikTok dances. Said his motor never stops running, and he's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
He compared him to Eugene Asante today in the press conference with that type of motor, that type of energy of how he's always moving, always wanting to get better. Yeah, he had 5 tackles, all of them solo tackles. Had 2 sacks, and 4 of his 5 tackles were tackles for loss. It's pretty solid.
You can't beat that.
Sylvester Smith right there in it as well. 6 tackles, all of them solo. Had 1 tackle for loss and
2
absolutely lit a couple people up on the kickoff return. And then again on that 3rd down play where Auburn had to stop Ball State 19 times from finding the end zone because of certain things in there. Keyron Crawford right in there had 4 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, or those sacks. DeMarcus Riddick,
yes,
had a sack as well. Jared Smith came in and had a sack late in the 4th quarter. Man, he's going to be somebody that's going to see the field in this conference just
because
he was
built to play in the SEC.
He really, really was. How nice is it, though? We're talking about a dominant defense, and you have to scroll down through defensive stats to see the name Keldrick Falk,
mm-hmm.
who had 1 tackle. Yet the defense was dominant. And again, so much of that goes to his credit because it's like what we've talked about with the offensive line and the defensive line. Not hearing their names sometimes is the biggest compliment. From us on the radio standpoint, the best thing ever is to not ever mention the offensive line because that shows that they're doing their job. The best time to mention them, or if they do mention them, it's on replays of, man, look what this guy did. Look at the hole. Look at the block that this guy got. On the defensive side of the football, sometimes it's so complimentative because it's, all right, we're throwing 3 guys at Keldrick Falk. We'll let these other guys come out, but you're not going to hear his name, and it's so much credit that goes to Keldrick Falk.
If you had to pick a concern from Saturday, mine was the offensive line. Again,
yes.
5 sacks given up, a couple of guys individually getting beat. The tackle spot struggled on Saturday, Mason Murphy and Xavier Chaplin. After having good games against Baylor, they struggled for whatever reason against Ball State. So that's my big concern from Saturday. That has to get cleaned up. That's my concern. If you had to pick one yourself, what would it be?
Yeah, I mean, probably.
I have another one if you're not going to take
probably
it.
Probably the offensive line. I mean, Towns, yeah, hurting himself on the far field goals.
That's what I was going to go with, too.
And so it just raises the question of, obviously, they don't want Alex out there kicking from 40-plus, and Gibbs, who came in, Hugh Freeze talked about him on the kickoffs of how they were electric and worked their way into the middle, if not the back part of the end zone, and got some touchbacks, so we'll wonder if we'll see him. Hugh Freeze did give an update and said that Towns will be fine. But, yeah, he almost kicked the ground before the football, and obviously that sent the shock through his leg. We all thought it was blocked initially, but
because it came up so short.
Right.
Yeah.
It was online, but yeah, he kicked the ground first and, you know, like an iron, sends the whole jolt through your
club. Oh, I'm well aware. Yeah, I'm well aware.
When you chunk the ball and hit the big ball before the little ball.
Yeah. So what's your concern?
The kicking.
Oh, okay. Okay.
If that's one of them, if I can't say the defensive or the offensive line.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you on that. We'll talk more about that as we go. And again, we want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We switch gears to all of college football in a week two that absolutely delivered. We talk about that next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And phone lines are open if you want to call in, give your thoughts from over the weekend, 334-321-1390. College football, NFL football, Auburn football in particular, high school football. I mean, anything you want to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. 334, what'd you say? No, don't call about that. 334-321-1390. Text box open as well. 334-784-1067. And we will continue talking Auburn as we go along, but do want to zoom out a little bit and talk about just week two of college football, because we did our best to tell you this throughout last week, but then especially on Friday, we were out at the Auburn Plaza Bar, and shout out to everybody who came out there. We had a good time, as we always do at the Plaza Bar. That one was brought to you by Sensegreen Heating and Cooling and Insulation, so we appreciate them for making that possible. But we told you that the weekend had potential to be really, really good in college football, and I think it delivered, Christian. I think it was what we wanted it to be. Will it go down as the craziest weekend of the year? Probably not.
Not from top to bottom, but you could throw a couple games in there.
Ain't no doubt about it. Ain't no doubt about it. Where do you want to start? What craziest game of the weekend? Craziest results? Where do you want to go? Oh,
my mic was off.
Oh,
the entire time.
Whoops.
Let's go back.
You're the one on the
college football, NFL football.
30 minutes into hour. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I made a stupid joke and then said not from top to bottom, but there's a couple games.
That's what happens when I don't wear my headset.
Could be thrown. Yeah.
You're on the controls, man.
I am.
That's on you.
I'm trying to mess it up so that way I don't have to do it anymore.
No,
I'm just kidding. But so, no, not from top to bottom
result.
Complete, but man, a whole lot of really, really fun games in there. You can almost talk about some of the games that are some of the teams that you almost expected to underdeliver just a little bit. We didn't spend too much time talking about that, but LSU didn't look great. Penn State didn't look great, nor did those teams really have to. Georgia played in a rain game and only beat Austin Peay 28-6. I don't put much stock into that.
Nah.
As much as you feel like social media and the box score viewers did. Miami looked really good. Oregon obviously looked incredible. That whole conversation the slaying of Gundy just because of NIL, and Oregon has more money, and Dan Lanning was not going to let up in that game. He was going to put
good
up
him,
as
honestly.
Many points as he could. Texas struggled early on against San Jose State. I think San Jose State's actually not a bad team at all. Clemson had to escape. Again, just working my way 1 through 10 right
now. Shout out Troy for going down there and giving them everything they wanted, man.
South Carolina. Man, a team that has the offense struggling right now. This is the reverse game of if you looked at the box score rather than like a LSU 23-7 win over Louisiana Tech. South Carolina and South Carolina State were the exact opposite. You go look at it, oh, South Carolina won 38-10. Okay, sure, that looks fine. That took two punt returns for a touchdown and great field position on the other one. This could have very easily been very close to a 17-10 final score.
Are you starting to worry about your Gamecocks here, Christian? Because this was one of your teams as a dark horse in the SEC, dark horse in the college football playoff. I don't think you had them getting there, but you had them knocking on the door.
This was one of the teams that early on in the preseason was one that I was very, very high on. Not as much because we learned more about the offensive line. We learned more about the receiving room. I think their defense is obviously incredible, and Lenore Sellers is incredible, but shows that if he doesn't have too much help, there could be a little bit of struggle in there. The team that I was very high on, and this was my send the house on a team that's going over, is Oklahoma, and so far that's looked pretty well. We'll dive into that one here in just a little bit.
I saw some people that have, it may have been on three today, that said John Mateer is at the top of their Heisman list
right now.
And it's like, come on, guys, let's chill out a little bit.
It's more of the team that he beat than anything else. We'll start with one of the games that we picked on our schedule. Again, for those that are not Friday listeners, you need to. But we pick 10 games every single week, and we pick basically who we think is going to win, almost College Game Day-esque, if you will. And we pick our 10 best games. And again, a 7-3 week for you, sir. Moves to 16-4, so not bad.
Not too bad.
Through 20 games so far whatsoever. I did a couple things I shouldn't have done. I had a 5-5 week, trying to make up a little bit of ground. Yeah, so we fought a 12-8, which is not.
Yeah, you got some great work to do over there.
We got some ground to make up.
That steak dinner's calling my name at the end of the year.
That's very, very true.
I'm going to eat it on air.
But for anybody that wants to sponsor that meal, that whoever loses has to pay for it, just let us know. Yeah. Illinois and Duke was one of the first games that we had mentioned. And to be honest, this is not just me defending Duke because I picked them to win. I don't think the scoreboard necessarily showed how good of a game this was through three and about half a quarter, but Illinois showed, you mentioned it, the experience of Luke Altmyer. He really, really took over in that second half, capitalized on every single one of Duke's mistakes. They had three drives that turned to turnovers, and Illinois scored on three straight, or scored on every single one of them. They went at 45-19, a really, really good win for the Illini on the road.
This was a fun game to watch. It really was, and I do think the experience for Illinois is the one that it's what came through. It's what shined.
It helped with there being 6,000 people in the stadium.
Yeah, that was wild, too. That was bad. The fact that Duke outgained Illinois, they threw for 350. They couldn't hardly run the ball,
no.
And Illinois was able to cash in on, get this, folks. If there is a stat that shows how Illinois dominated this game, how about a ratio of turnovers? Duke had 5.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. In the second half, Duke had 3 straight drives that led into turnovers, and Illinois had 21 points off of them.
And that's what good teams do. That's what good teams do. Duke had 5 turnovers. Illinois had 0 on the road. Penalties weren't all that crazy in this game. But look, Illinois is an experienced team. They're good. They're talented. Now they're a top 10 team, as I figured they would be. And they deserve it, because that Duke team's going to beat some folks in the ACC. Illinois handled business in this game, and now they're a top 10 team because of it.
Illinois was number 11 last week, working our way down from the top, are working our way from 1-25. What was the most, maybe not the most surprising game of the week, but my goodness, one of the most surprising outcomes and the most exciting fourth quarter finale that you might see all year, Arizona State and Mississippi State. We didn't get to catch the true end of this game because we were on the field and worked our way to the press conference, but we saw that Mississippi State took the lead with 50 seconds left, or did they tie it with the field? No, they took the lead.
No, they took the lead.
They kicked the field goal to take the lead with 58 seconds remaining. And all of a sudden, about 3 minutes later, in the middle of Hugh Freeze giving his opening statements, you kind of heard the entire room go, "Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh." Because there was a notification that Arizona State, sorry, Arizona State kicked the field goal to go up. Mississippi State then had to respond. So apologies. But everybody got the notification that Mississippi State just completed, what was it, a 58-yard touchdown?
58-yard touchdown to Brennan Thompson with 30 seconds to play. And Mississippi State upsets Arizona State, rushes the field, cowbell going crazy. And look, I don't know how good Arizona State's going to end up being, and this will be more of your argument coming up in about 20 minutes or so. But on paper, Mississippi State just got a top 15 win on their own field. And that's big news for Mississippi State and for Jeff Lebby. Like that's a big, big win for not just Mississippi State, I think for the SEC.
I agree. I think it's a very big win for the SEC. You now look at the two Big 12 favorites, and it was Kansas State and Arizona State. Oof.
Oof is right. Kansas State is bad. Kansas State is bad.
Who did not see, fell to 1-2 after a loss to Army. They are one decent drive away in late in the fourth quarter for being 0-3.
For what I would say is, without looking it up, probably the most popular bet to win the Big 12 preseason.
They were, yeah. And one of the preseason top 10 Heisman favorites in Avery Johnson, which, credit to him, he hasn't played terrible. The rest of the team just has not been good around him. And then Army had like 42 minutes of time of possession or something crazy like that.
What they do,
to
man.
Where Kansas State just had to put pressure on every single drive and couldn't get it done. Arizona State beats Mississippi State, the biggest upset of the entire week. 13th ranked Florida. Everybody said that it could happen. There was nobody that said that it will. There were people that took South Florida to cover the 17 or 18 and a half, but I don't think anybody expected Byron Brown to walk into Gainesville and outperform DJ Lagway. And my goodness, the rumblings that were in Tuscaloosa moved their way down to Gainesville.
Look, this game was ugly. I mean, 18 to 16, this game is bad, right? But Florida just can't figure it out. And man,
if you're South Florida too, you almost want it to be an ugly game, right? I mean, you feel like that gives you even more of a chance.
I just feel like, man, I really like Billy Napier. I do. I really like him. I thought this was a good hire for Florida when they made it. I thought he took over a bleep show, you know what I'm saying? But my God, every time you think Florida's right there on the verge of turning the corner, they're about to figure it out. Here come the Gators with all this talent on defense, and DJ Lagway's the answer, right? I'm not saying this after week one over Rhode Island State Penitentiary. I'm just saying, in general, you felt like Florida was about to make that turn. It's like, okay, they have a chance to beat a solid South Florida team on their home field as 17.5-point favorites going into what I think is at least the second hardest schedule in college football, if not the hardest schedule in college football.
They have the toughest next month, without a doubt.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And the conversations weren't even about Florida making the college football playoff. It's like, man, if you're Billy Napier, survive. Get a couple of wins in there, prove that you can do it, and you're going to be okay. That's where we were on this team, on this coach, on this program. And you let South Florida come to the swamp and beat you as 17.5-point underdogs. And the problem is, as you mentioned, Florida is, I'll say it, screwed. They play at LSU this weekend, at Miami next weekend, a bye week that could have a lot of movement. Then they host Texas, who by that point will be off and running. Arch looked good this weekend. Then they go to Texas A&M. Not to mention Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Florida State are still on that schedule.
Whew.
You're done. Billy's done. Sun Belt Billy's gone. And I'm sorry, I hate it. And he'll probably go somewhere else, and he'll probably be a good coach. But it ain't going to happen at Florida. I'm sorry. It's just not going to happen for him.
I don't think there's too many Florida fans that are daily listeners to On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Auburn and Opelika. If you are, shout out to you, and let us know if you are. And a stat that will make you metaphorically in-game drive off the road. You fired Dan Mullen when he was 34-15 through 49 games.
Say it again.
39-15.
39 or 34?
34, sorry, yeah. 34-15 through 49 games. That was when Florida fired Dan Mullen. 34-15 through 39 games.
Who's now 3-0 at UNLV.
Who is, yes. Sunbelt Billy is 20-20.
Yeah. 14 less wins in the same amount of games.
Almost. Still. Getting 9 more. You ain't going 9-0 to even get to anywhere close to that.
That's such a humbling stat for Florida. And I don't know.
We had it too. We understand.
Yeah.
We understand.
Yeah, we get it. I don't know of any Florida fan that's still on the train of give him a chance, give him time. Like, I just, and again, it was an impossible situation, I feel like, with what has seemed to be the most difficult schedules we've ever seen. Florida's one of those teams, we may have talked about this before, they're one of those teams that has really suffered since the SEC West and East got dissolved. I think I mentioned that a few weeks ago. They're a team that suffered because of it. Look at their schedule this year, man. They're playing teams they shouldn't be playing or didn't play historically.
No.
And now that they've decided that the whole state of Florida is going to play each other, which I think is awesome. I think that's great for the state of Florida. I think it's great for college football. I think it's great for high school recruiting down there. The fact that Florida State, Miami, South Florida, UCF, Florida, they all have decided, hey, let's schedule each other. There's enough of us here. Let's play. Let's play each other. Let's see what we got, right? Seems like they were all scared of each other for so long, yeah. But Florida's just on the wrong end of it, and it ain't going to happen for Billy. And I hate it for him. I do. I think he's a good dude. I think he's a good coach, but it ain't happening in Gainesville.
One more game before we head to break. We'll leave Florida State and East Texas A&M out there. Tommy Castellanos absolutely dominated. We'll leave Michigan, Oklahoma for the next break, but real quick, Iowa State and Iowa, a game that, well, we said is going to be very low scoring because for some reason it always is. Iowa State closed as a 2.5-point favorite, and they win it by a field goal. Rocco Beck didn't do great, didn't do a lot, but did enough against the Iowa offense, which is not saying much at all. And again, a rivalry game that many people will overlook, but I think will turn into a pretty good win for Iowa State. And it's one of those where you throw everything else out to the side because it's got a trophy in place, because it's a big-time rivalry, and the defense has really showed out.
Yeah, I think so. I think Iowa State did what they needed to do to get a win and a rivalry against a really stout defense for Iowa. So, look, Kirk Ferentz is still going for the all-time wins record as a Big Ten head coach, but he didn't get it this weekend against Iowa State. Couple of other games we need to talk about that were barn burners this weekend, and one SEC team that made a statement and nobody's talking about. We talk about that to wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we take our top of the hour break, where in hour number two, we'll have some more conversations on college football, kind of reactions from week two. Look at the newest AP poll, coaches poll, and ooh, Christian's going to tell you why he loves them and can't wait to break it down for you. And then we're also going to talk to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network coming up in the second hour. I texted him this morning and I said, do I have to ask? And he said, absolutely not. Talk to you at 3:30. So, looking forward to having him on this afternoon to recap what he saw inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium on Saturday night. But a couple of more games that we want to discuss before we get out of here for hour number one. Quickly here, Oklahoma-Michigan. It was the biggest game of the weekend on paper. Oklahoma did what they needed to do. Defense looked solid. Forced Bryce Underwood to not beat them, basically, and not play as Superman. He was 9 of 24.
I was going to say, their offensive coordinator didn't help.
No, and
he also didn't run the football at all.
Which is crazy to me. With as athletic as he is, not running him at all, I get he's the $8 million man, but like not using his athleticism to your advantage seems a little questionable to
me. Especially if you're not having success throwing the football.
And I understand, too. You got Justice Haynes as your running back. You need to use him. He had 19 carries for 125 yards. You were gashing him for 6.5 yards per carry. I get that. But you also didn't cash in, and the Brent Venables defense did what they needed to do, as a DJ Durkin defense does, bend, don't break.
Yeah.
You can run it between the 30s. That's cool. You're not going to score, and that's exactly what happened to Michigan. John Mateer and the Oklahoma offense thought he was fine. He was 21 of 34, 270 through the air, one touchdown, one pick. They ran it okay. I wouldn't say great. I don't know how good Oklahoma feels coming out of this game as a team. I think the win was nice.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't feel like I learned a whole lot about this Oklahoma team. Is that crazy to say?
I feel like it almost tells more about Michigan than it does Oklahoma, which complements to them. You don't mean for that in a negative way, but it still feels like there's some more question marks. Obviously, John Mateer is a freak. I do think he'll have to pay for a couple balls that he has later in the season, because when things kind of go into his hands on the straight playmaking and the creativity side, again, I love his ability to throw the ball downfield, but he does like to push the issue a little bit, and I could see this OU team suffer just a little bit. Real quickly, Ole Miss beats Kentucky. It was a game that...
Congrats, Lane!
Yeah, congrats, Lane. Go check his FanDuel account, somebody, for since he made an open apology to all of the gamblers for Stoops kicking a field goal, which they needed anyways, right before time expired. UL Monroe in Alabama, Tennessee and East Tennessee State, woohoo! Yeah. Indiana, Kennesaw State, woohoo! Mm-hmm. Texas Woody-hoo. Tech and Kent State, again, not really anything. And Utah, Devin Dampier continues to do what he does. But two games that we do want to mention before the music kicks us out of here is freaking Baylor and SMU.
What
that
a
barn burner.
Wild
what a
game.
Crazy game. Sawyer Robertson could legitimately be the best quarterback that Auburn sees in the regular season.
There's a really good chance, and a lot of people have already started to talk, even before this game, but definitely after this game, that could be the best offense that Auburn sees all season long.
There was a lot of talking when Baylor was down 2 touchdowns with 5.5 minutes to play. And then you saw what Sawyer Robertson, and you saw what that offense did. And there is no more of that.
Thought there was a hardball on the sidelines for SMU with how they blew it in this game. And just decision-making and three and outs and turnovers and just all sorts of things that SMU, yes, they helped. I'm not going to say they fully gave it away, but they definitely helped Baylor. And going into two overtimes on the road, down by 2 scores, basically the entire game, and Baylor walks out victorious with a top 25 win.
That was one of the really good games, but a game before, again, the music before it kicks us out of here, a game that you have is a team that made a lot of noise that the media just doesn't really seem to be giving too much love, and how convenient that I get to talk about this game right when we come back. But go ahead, sir.
What did I say on Friday at the Plaza Bar? Until he gives me a reason to do it, I ain't betting against Diego Pavia and the Vanderbilt Commodores. They go on the road in Blacksburg to Virginia Tech and just put it on them, buddy. I mean, put it on the Hokies. That's a team, and that's a win that not enough people are talking about. Outgained them by what, Christian?
300 in the second half.
Boom.
And shout out to Mississippi State and Vanderbilt social media teams as well.
Oh, my God.
They were absolutely incredible. Vanderbilt, on their winning post, said, "Enter Sandman is for closers, and you ain't Mo." Talk about Mariano Rivera, and absolutely incredible.
Yep, good stuff there from week two of college football. We talk about that and more coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7.
ESPNAU.com and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 1067. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 1067, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 1067. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us and getting your week started off right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 1067. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch up with the podcast. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. You can also find it wherever you get your podcast. Just search for On the Line. You'll find it there as well. In hour number one, we gave our initial thoughts on Auburn versus Ball State as the Tigers get a nice win. Statistically, one of the most dominant victories that Auburn football has ever had in the history of the program. And so, talked a lot about that in hour number one. Also talked some of the week two results, big ones in the SEC around college football and more. We talked a lot about that in the first hour. So again, if you missed any of that, you can go and catch up with the podcast on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we get to talk with Jacob Hillman at 3:30 of the Auburn Sports Network, get his thoughts on the first game inside Jordan Hare, what the environment, what everything looked like, and man, how nice it is to be able to say that the Auburn Tigers are 2-0. We get to talk a little bit about the AP Top 25. We're going to dive into more of the actual rankings. And, man, I have a little bit of a rant that I've kind of teased throughout the entire show today. It has nothing to do with Auburn being in the Top 25, but that's where we get to start before we break down the entire Top 25. Man, we appreciate everybody for being here with us on ESPN 106.7. He's Jacob Goins. I'm Christian Griffin. And what a day that it has become already. What a day, what a show that it's becoming, and what a show that it has been already, man. We're going to have a lot of fun here in hour number two.
Yep, phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show here in hour number two. Up until we talk to Jacob Hillman at 3:30, you can do so by giving us a call at 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. And we start hour number two by heading to the phone lines with Lonnie down in Lochipoca. What's up, my man? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, guys. How are y'all doing?
Doing good, man. Good to hear from you.
It was good to see Auburn enter the top 25 again after the potato famine.
Yeah, first time since 2021 that Auburn has seen a number next to their name, Lonnie.
Well, it's been a long time coming. I like what I'm seeing from this team. It was really nice to see the defense play very well the other night, albeit against Ball State, but of course, that we should have gotten the shutout. Frankly, that I don't know. Can we just do away with all replay in general, because they get them wrong half the time anyway? So let's just scrap it.
I'm with you on that, and
go back to the way it was. You know, because it just doesn't make sense. They're missing. So I don't even know what these guys in the booth are looking at. Did y'all think that was a fumble?
There were several instances in this game on Saturday for Auburn that were really, really bad.
And unfortunately, on that one, they can't, since they ruled forward progress, that's not a reviewable play.
Well, that's absurd. I mean, then that rule needs to be changed.
I agree.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. I see it in not just Auburn games. I see it in other games, too, where it's like, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, well, this call is obviously going to be upheld. And then they come in and overturn it, and I'm like, what in the world are these guys looking at?
Yeah, that's the problem, is that the video review, when it was first implemented and really introduced, right, it was supposed to be there to help
make the call, right? To help get it right, to help you make the right decision. But now half the time, Lonnie, they go to video review, A, because they can and want to feel important, but B, they use it and look at something completely different, or like you said, still get the call wrong, which in my opinion is just totally unacceptable. But here we are again talking about officials who aren't held accountable.
Well, maybe they need to start using AI or something. I have no idea, but it's just, it's brutal. It slows the game down. They're getting it wrong half the time, and it just doesn't make sense. But anyway, the other thing I wanted to talk about is Gus Malzahn. What happened to him the last two or three years at Auburn versus what I'm seeing now from him? Can we fire Derek Nix and bring back Gus Malzahn as our offensive coordinator? I know he's still got a lake place at Lake Martin. I mean, good grief. This guy completely went back to what we saw in 2013, 14, 15. I mean, what happened? Yeah. I don't, because he went away from that. It's part of the reason that he got fired. I mean, I know a lot of it had to do with offensive line recruiting too, because he,
that was the, yes.
I mean, that was a big deal, but I mean, the guy is dialing it up like I've never seen, or at least, you know, the last time I saw it was his first couple of years in Auburn. But, I mean, it's very impressive. I mean, it is. And even if Florida State doesn't have all the personnel that they need this year, Gus Malzahn may have them in a spot to go pretty far just by the way that he's calling plays right now.
There's no doubt, and I'm really curious, and I know we did it against Alabama, and we're still waiting to see what the true verdict is on that Alabama defense, which hasn't looked good the first 2 weeks, but I'm really looking to see what he does in the ACC, because a lot of it is the same stuff that he ran over a decade ago, Lonnie, but you're right. I mean, that Florida State team, now, East Texas A&M, A, I didn't even know was a school, but B, they're not very good. Putting up 77 points is impressive. But how about 729 total yards of offense for Florida State in this game?
It's the thing. He's got the eye candy going again, man. And yeah. I think that's, you know, maybe he didn't have the players on the offensive line to run it the last few years and everything. But I used to complain about it to Uncle T-Bone all the time, particularly the last couple of years. I was like, what happened to all the misdirection? What happened to the pull blocking? What happened to the, you know, constant players going in motion? It was like he went away from that, and now he's gotten back to it, and he's having a lot of success. And, I mean, it's very impressive to see. I've always liked Gus Malzahn, and, you know, I wish him the best. I really hope he has a lot of success there. But I'll leave it for somebody else. I'm going to call you guys later on in the week and give my prognostication on the game. So we'll talk later on in the week, but War Eagle guys.
Yep. Appreciate the call, Lonnie. Always good to hear from you, my man. 334-321-1390. And Christian, I know you have thoughts on Gus in particular, and why he was failing down the stretch at Auburn, why it never really got off the ground at UCF, and why it seems like he's back to his old self there in Tallahassee.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest one was, yeah, the lack of offensive line recruiting. Norvell did always – he did have that even when Gus Malzahn stepped in at Florida State. The biggest thing was DJ Uiagalelei, who was behind the offensive line, and then the defense didn't necessarily help out as much as well. But that shows why Tommy Castellanos went there. Again, Auburn was his top school, and then all of a sudden Gus Malzahn walked in to Mike Norvell's office and said, no, that's the quarterback that I want right there. You want my offense. You trusted me. That's why you brought me here. It's with guys like that. It's with Nick Marshall type of guys to run the offense, and that's what Tommy Castellanos is doing right now.
And I think you're also seeing, too, through the first two games of this season, and again, I really want to see what Malzahn does when they play teams like Clemson and folks like that.
You won't hear much about them the next 2 weeks because it's Kent State and then it's at Virginia, but the stretch of Miami and Pitt, both at home, but then Stanford, Wake Forest, and Clemson, right there, the middle of your stretch before you hit Florida to end your season. But those two games, Miami and Pitt, could tell you a lot about what you need to know.
And that's what I want to see. But my point is the fact that you're seeing the difference in what Gus Malzahn can do as a head coach versus just a strictly play calling offensive coordinator. That's the difference right now.
We had a conversation with that with somebody. I can't remember exactly who it was, but it was, you know, does he take more time off now because of it, or does he not have to? And it was like, no, it's just the fact of he doesn't have to split up the time. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to go to these defensive meetings and try and figure out why the safeties aren't where they need to be or why the linebackers are missing the gaps on runs. I'm spending all of my time on the offensive side of the football. He seems a lot more relaxed. And it feels like that's where the success has been coming from.
Yeah, somebody just texted me and said, Gus is an incredible offensive coordinator and play caller, much better than he is as a head coach. When Gus has to only worry about the offense, he's one of the best in the game.
Yeah,
again. Still, in 2025.
He was one of the first to do it, and I wouldn't be surprised if they continue to go that way in college football. When you see these head coaches, as they get their way a little bit older, realize they don't want to have the same responsibility and realize that they can still make what they used to make half a decade ago or a decade ago being a head coach.
Which is so crazy.
But I can do that now being an OC, or I can be I can be a defensive coordinator. Hell yeah.
I mean, look at Brian Harsin. Hate to use his name on these airwaves, but it's like, man, look at him. He got fired for being a horrifically bad head coach at Auburn. They paid him whatever it was, $15, $16 million to kick rocks and move back across the country. Now he's an offensive coordinator at California. Does anybody care about him? No. But he's making pretty good money to be the offensive coordinator California.
Passive income helps, too.
Well, that too. Yeah.
But regardless, even if that wasn't the case, it would still... You're taking so much stress off of it, and Gus Malzahn is the perfect and kind of the first real pioneer, not the first pioneer to do this, but in this day and age of let me cut my responsibilities, not make as much as I was, but I'll go back to making what I was as a head coach a decade ago and not have to worry about any responsibilities other than making sure that this football finds the end zone.
I can't remember. I'm about to Google it. And then we're going to talk the AP poll, just the top 25 really quickly, take a break, and then let you let off some steam here in just a moment. I'm about to Google because I don't remember how much. I'm literally going to say, how much does Brian Harsin make at California? At California. I don't remember how much they're paying him, to be honest with you. This says... he's not being paid for a position, but rather for his time as the head. Wait, what? All right, that article's stupid. Let's see what this article says. Because I don't remember. Do you, Christian? How much he's being paid out there as the OC at California? This article doesn't say how much he's making.
They said that his contract details with the university are not publicly available due to Cal regulations or something.
That must be a state of California thing.
Where you don't have to...
You may not have to disclose that.
If it helps, though, we got 15.3, or will get 15.3 from Auburn, so...
And got, what, half of that in the first 30 days after being fired?
Yeah.
That's nice. Yeah, that's nice. If somebody has the official number on that somehow, some way, let me know. I bet he's probably making...
What? 1.3, 1.4?
No, I wasn't. California? No, ain't no way. I was thinking like 6 or 7. $600,000 or $700,000 to be the offensive coordinator at Cal, a team that has contemplated getting rid of their football program.
I think that was a joke a couple weeks ago, but
I wouldn't doubt it if it happens, though. I mean, ain't no way it's making good money out there.
No.
Regardless, back to Lonnie's point. Yes, Gus Malzahn is absolutely dialing it up. Florida State had over 700 yards of offense this weekend.
It's okay. Just wait. After Kent State, when they're going to be 35-point favorites at Virginia.
Can't read, can't write, Kent State, baby.
But after that, Virginia, ESPN, 6 o'clock. Ain't no way anything goes wrong when you're big, heavy favorites in this game, right?
No.
And then you'll bounce back and beat Miami.
That would be the Gus Malzahn way. No doubt about it.
We'll have big conversations with that right there. But, again, well, before we hit our break and before the Christian Griffin Victory Monday rant on the AP poll, the AP poll was released, and this time it was on a Sunday. They made up for the Tuesday AP poll with releasing it on Sunday the next week, and that's kind of the main point of my rant of a makeup. And that was essentially what it is, but it's Ohio State 1, Penn State 2, LSU 3, Oregon jumps 2 to 4. Miami stays at number 5. Georgia flips places with Oregon. They're number 6. They drop 2 spots. Texas doesn't move at 7. Notre Dame jumps 1 to go to 8 after a bye week. Illinois moves to 9. And Florida State jumps 4 spots after beating East Texas A&M to be the number 10 team in the country. South Carolina drops one. Clemson drops four. OU jumps 5 to 13. Iowa State to 14. Tennessee in there.
Great weekend for the Vols.
Yeah, after dominating, move 7 spots to number 15. I'll dive into that momentarily as well. A&M to 16, Ole Miss up 3 to 17. South Florida in there at the 18th spot in the new AP poll top 25. Alabama to 19, Utah jumps 5 spots to 20. Texas Tech, Indiana, Michigan drops 8 spots to 23. And then two new SEC teams make their way into the AP poll top 25. The Auburn Tigers and the Missouri Tigers. And you feel like those are both very well warranted.
We'll talk more about this AP poll right after this. Text box is open 334-784-1067 on the way out. Someone says Harsin is going to get all he wants this weekend against Minnesota. Fact. And I don't think he's terribly wrong on that one. We'll talk more about the AP poll right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Got another segment before we get to the phone lines. We'll welcome in Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. We'll talk to him about Auburn football's 2-0 start, being ranked for the first time in nearly 4 years, and also other updates from around Auburn athletics as well. So we'll have him join us coming up in about 10 or 12 minutes or so once we take our bottom of the hour break. But Christian, the floor is yours, my friend.
Is it time?
Yeah, it's time. It is here. It is. I know you've been waiting on this one.
Oh,
so,
man.
Just to give a little prelude here for a second, we're discussing the AP poll because of how dumb it is this early in the season. That's basically where we're at. This is not a new conversation.
No. And it's one that's actually picked up a little bit of steam.
Because more people are starting to realize what we've been saying this entire time is true.
Yeah.
That rankings in the first month and a half of the season, A, are pointless, but B, they only exist because ratings need them to exist.
Correct. First off, again, this is not at all about Auburn. We'll go ahead and talk about that for a second. Auburn ranks in the top 25 for the first time since 2021, as they should be.
Yeah, it was a week earlier than I thought it would be, but overall, I thought, yes, like, again, I thought it would be after next week that Auburn would be ranked in the top 25 just because of how college football works, and I didn't think a win over Ball State was going to do it, right? I didn't think enough teams would lose or enough chaos would happen in week two for Auburn to move their way in there. But I did think they would be a top 25 team if they beat Baylor before the Oklahoma game because...
It's dumb. It's so...
Because of the reasons that Christian's about to tell you.
Because it's so dumb. I'm trying to find the true route that I want to take with this, man.
Hey, you've had long enough.
I have.
Auburn was always going to be... If Auburn beat Baylor, they were always going to be a top 25 team when they went on the road to Oklahoma to give TV ratings and radio ratings and magazine ratings and radio and every sort of rating for the hype to be there.
Sure.
And I understand that side of the business. I do. I get it. We're in that business, right? You understand it, but it's stupid to be using these rankings and things and taking them for everything this early in the season.
Yeah, this week, this AP poll right here is the makeup for what did or did not happen in week one. A perfect example of exactly what you're talking about. Tennessee moving up 7 spots after beating East Tennessee State 72-17. They move up 7 spots to make it a top 15 game in Knoxville, Tennessee with Georgia and Tennessee. That's the only reason that they did it. This was not anything because I think Tennessee is the 15th ranked team in the country, whether you think so or not, sure. But why would you think that not after week one and all of a sudden because they beat East Tennessee State that now they belong in the top 15. If you're going to do it in week one after they beat Syracuse, who might not be everything that we thought they were after beating UConn by 7 in overtime. Shout out Fran Brown for making his team run sprints on the field after the game. It was freaking awesome. But the only reason that Tennessee is a top 15 team right now, according to week two in the AP poll, is because they're playing in Neyland Stadium, they're hosting Georgia, and they need to say a top 15 game in the SEC. Another one, a team that you mentioned just to end our number one, Vanderbilt. Why the hell is Vanderbilt not ranked? But South Carolina is the 10th ranked team in the country, or the 11th ranked team in the country now after dropping a spot. So they both played the same team. South Carolina did it at a neutral site, and it took special teams for them to beat Virginia Tech. Vanderbilt went on the road and BDA.
As an underdog.
As an underdog at Virginia Tech at a place where, again, it's intimidating to play, especially in the opener or especially in the runouts before the game. But they outgamed them by 300 yards in the second half on the road as an underdog. Why is Vanderbilt not ranked? If that is the argument of Week 2's AP poll. South Florida is the 18th ranked team in the country. They have the best resume in college football right now. You're beating Boise State, and then you go into Gainesville. You go into the swamp, and you beat Florida. If any other team in the country, or any other P4 team in the country, any team in the top 10 or the top 25 to start the AP poll, in the preseason AP poll top 25, if any of those teams had done that or has that with their resume, or you put South Florida's team and you put them with the Georgia logo or the Miami logo or the Notre Dame logo or the Illinois logo, they're a top five team in the country, if not the number one team in the country, because it's little old South Florida who's a G5 team, and they weren't expected to do anything
right
in the preseason. They weren't expected. They were like 98th. So we can just throw them to the side. Now all of a sudden they're the 18th ranked team in the country, which, yes, credit to them, they should be ranked. Whether you think they're the 18th team in the or number 18 team in the country or not is beside the point. It's the fact that they have the best resume in college football right now. Yet a team like Texas, who's 1-1, is above them. A team like Clemson, who had to sneak out a Troy win at home, is above them. All of those, both of those teams, Texas and Clemson, were because of where they started in the preseason top 25 for the AP poll. That's blasphemous. That is so stupid. Why is Alabama ranked if Arizona State's not ranked anymore?
I've said a valid question. Saying, why is Alabama above Auburn? Legitimate.
Another valid question. Why is Alabama ranked above Auburn?
If you're going, and your whole argument here is, if I'm hearing this correctly, is if we're truly ranking these teams based off of what we've seen on the field, which is what a ranking should be.
Yes. It's the only reason there is a ranking.
Are messed up. Notre Dame is 0-1 on the season.
And with a bye week, they moved up. They didn't play anybody last week, and they jumped up a spot.
Does that not sound backwards to some people?
Yeah, Illinois goes on the road to beat Duke, and they're still behind Notre Dame.
Right. It's just the whole system is backwards. It doesn't make any sense, is the problem, is what you're getting at. And I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. Like, if you're going to rank these teams, if we rank them at the end for the college football playoff based off of what they've done, why are we going to rank them before the season on what we think they're going to do?
And then put expectations on that of this team should be good, so we're going to give them that buffer loss. Who cares? Do I think Clemson's a top 25 team? Yes. Do I think Texas is a top 25 team? Yes. But when you're sitting here looking at what these rankings are trying to prove, I just do not understand it. If half of these teams had what USF had, they'd be a top five or the number one team in the country. Why isn't Oregon number two? Since Penn State and LSU didn't look good. If this is following that argument, because Penn State and LSU are expected to make the college football playoff and they're title contenders. Preseason expectations should not reflect whatever the hell your current rankings say that they should be.
Preseason rankings shouldn't determine your preseason expectations, is what I would say.
Sure. The fact of we're going to limit a team because they're not in the top 25 and they shouldn't really do anything. So now that they do it, we still have to have the guardrails up. We still have to have the blinking light that says caution, because we don't know what they're going to do.
And yet this is a poll that's voted on by like 200-something people. Absurd, man. People that should not be involved with it anymore. It is what it is. We talk to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network after this.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And, man, we're happy to bring this guy back on the show, as we do every single Monday at 3:30. And we get to talk about another win with Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network, who was at the stadium on Saturday. He was in the stadium on Saturday and watched the Tigers beat Ball State. Mr. Hillman, happy Monday, sir. I'm sure you are doing fantastic.
I absolutely am, Jacob, and it's been a fun last week or so preparing for game day, getting ready, and it all culminating into what was just a fantastic experience and atmosphere for the Auburn family. 88,043 strong, 16th straight sellouts coming up on Saturday. That was the 15th. It was an amazing Saturday night at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Well, we're going to dive into the game and kind of your thoughts on Auburn's performance offensively, defensively, and everything in between coming up in just a few minutes. But for the first home game of the year, with a lot of new things being debuted, the scoreboard, right? They did the loading screen on the scoreboard and the new laser show. And, of course, the fourth quarter hype was there and everything. I mean, it goes back to what we've talked about, right? What the difference was inside that stadium for Tiger fans to be there 1-0 with a good win versus 0-1 and just looking for a cupcake victory, right?
Yeah, it was really just, you could feel it was a palpable buzz all day long on campus leading up to kickoff, and especially inside the stadium after getting that big win over Baylor, but also just the anticipation to see the new scoreboard, the new Musco lighting system, and all that credit goes to the fan experience crews, the War Eagle Productions, War Eagle Creative, and so on. So many other behind-the-scenes folks that worked so hard over the summer and over the last several weeks to get that ready for that moment on Saturday night against Ball State. And obviously, more night games to come. We know that Georgia game is looming on October 11th, but you still got a few more games to win before you get to that point. So, again, just a fantastic environment, and it all culminated on Saturday night.
How nice was it, Hillman, to be able to watch this offense go out and work on the things that they say they needed to work on after not seeing that in Waco against Baylor, just because the run game was so dominant all week long? It was Hugh Freeze talking about the offense and wanting to get the receivers plenty of reps, plenty of routes, plenty of targets. You were able to see that, and you saw this offense take care of business without having to go overly, we call it vanilla, right? The vanilla offense. We're not having to show your whole hand, but the offense took care of business and did exactly what they needed to do.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was really a phenomenal game. Again, that's from week to week where you're starting to see these game plans that are consistently great, where you get exactly what you want out of your offense and the defense as well. Because I think the key on defense in week one against Baylor was just the tackling. I thought the game plan was there and everything was set up for success. Just a few missed tackles. That was cleaned up mostly here on Saturday night in Jordan-Hare Stadium. And I think this is a game where you can kind of look at the box score and it tells you the story of how dominant Auburn was against this Ball State offense, against this Ball State defense as well, because Auburn was able to spread the ball out to a lot of different playmakers, whether it's through the air or on the ground, with Jeremiah Cobb feels like every time he touched the ball, he broke a big one. And then you have the younger guys, obviously, with Damari Alston out, Darrell Robinson, Omar Mattson, they got their touches as well in that game. And hopefully Darrell Robinson is able to get back fully healthy after what Coach Freeze mentioned today. He had to get rushed to Birmingham after he woke up on Sunday and had that issue with his thigh. So hoping that he can get back to 100% sooner rather than later. But then you look at the receivers, and Cam Coleman didn't score a touchdown, but he'll take seven catches for 77 yards, including that exciting hurdle that he had. I don't know if I want him to try that every single week, but it was still an exciting play and shows off his athleticism. And not to mention Eric Singleton, his two touchdowns ratio. Fields got in the end zone. Malcolm Simmons got the ball several times. And then your tight end, Preston Howard, again, he only had one reception for 8 yards. But the fact that these four receivers also got it more than or four more times, that's just going to open up the field so much more for Preston Howard, as well as Perry Thompson and other guys that are getting key snaps in these ball games. So I'm really excited for what's to come. Jackson Arnold, he looked great in the pocket, 24 for 28. That you can't beat that. Obviously, I think the biggest concern was the four sacks that he took.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how Auburn adjusts and if maybe that was just because of the different types of pass plays that were called and if that changes over the next few weeks. So I'm excited. I don't know if it – I'm not sure if I'm concerned about it at this point as much as I am. That was just a product of the game plan and what was being called.
We're talking with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here on ESPN 106.7, our longtime Monday 3:30 guest. And Hillman, obviously the coaches and the players are not taking this mindset, but putting you into the fan perspective that we are all in right now, how nice was it to not have to overanalyze anything like this? You're not having to overanalyze this win of, yeah, Auburn couldn't do it against Baylor. They did it against Ball State, but, you know, you're having to build that false confidence and overlook everything. And Jackson Arnold did this, but he couldn't do it against this good team. Auburn's now 2-0, winning two very different games and having two very different game plannings, or two very different styles of play, rather. How nice is it and how refreshing is it to not have to overanalyze a really, really good win unless you're doing it on the positive side?
Yeah, no, you're right. It's one of those things where you look at it after the fact and think to yourself, man, Auburn really, it was 42-3, and you look around the league and around the country and you see some absolutely dominant scores. You know, 73-0 across the state. Their Oregon put up 69 on Oklahoma State, and there's some other scores. But you know, Auburn's is only 42-3. I say only 42-3, but when you look at it, Auburn dominated this football game, and it was a really weird football game to an extent where obviously you look at the end of the third quarter. Auburn probably should have had a shutout, and just what happened there, and just different things happened in that game that if they had gone a little bit differently, Auburn might have put up 56 or 63. Who knows? Point being is that that's not the takeaway really I've seen anyone take that, oh, Auburn only won 42-3. I think it's more so, okay, Auburn looked really dang good against Ball State, and that was on the defensive side of the football as well, where, like I mentioned, there were some talk about the tackling in week one against Baylor. But then today, or on Saturday night, Sylvester Smith took that to heart, and he had three absolutely brutal hits against Ball State.
Yeah.
One on a kickoff, two on crucial downs. And then you also look at Xavier Atkins, who had all those tackles for loss. I think two of them were sacks. It really is just something that you see the team start to, like you said, it was a little bit of a different game flow from week to week, but the team still was locked in and dominated for 60 minutes.
And so, Hillman, even though it was a good win, and the numbers would say it was even bigger than the score, as you were mentioning right there, is there any area of concern that you look for Auburn to get cleaned up and fixed this upcoming week, right? It's an early kick, South Alabama, 11:45 a.m. Anything that you're looking for the Tigers to get cleaned up or fix or work on before they do go to Norman, which is confirmed to be a 2:30 kickoff next time, or next week, that is, rather, in Norman?
Yeah, no, it's definitely the pass protection, and maybe not necessarily the pass protection, but Jackson Arnold, and I think, because I think some of those sacks were because of Jackson holding onto the ball a few seconds too long in the pocket, and that's part of him getting comfortable and getting confident in the system. I'll take those four sacks if he goes 24 for 28 every single game for 250 yards and three touchdowns with no interceptions, but you don't want him to get sacked four times every game, and I just think that finding that rhythm with the offensive line where they know, because again, it was a much different game style, game plan from the Waco game where Jackson was running wild the entire game. He was sitting back there in the pocket going through his progressions, and some of the routes were a little bit more intermediate or shorter than maybe any of those deep go balls, any posts, anything like that. But I still just thought that I'd like to see that cleaned up a little bit more. And if that's the case, I'll feel quite a bit more confident going into Oklahoma, because that's a good Sooners team. But again, you got to get through South Alabama first, and that's a key time to clean up anything like that, that's still kind of a loose end where you think that's not quite where we want it to be.
He's a big part of the Auburn Sports Network. Jacob Hillman with us on the phone lines here during the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And look, as great as football has been so far, a couple of weeks into that, we're several weeks into other fall sports around the plains. Tell the fans and the folks at home what else has been going on.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Volleyball opened up its home slate. 2-0 with two sweeps, one over Troy, one over Jackson State. So Brent Crouch and the Tigers, they have their first big home test tomorrow night at against Virginia as part of this ACC-SEC showdown at the net that the conferences are kind of emulating what men's and women's basketball does. So a big matchup, 5:30 Central at Neville Arena tomorrow night, free to attend, and going to be a lot of exciting volleyball to come at Neville Arena later this season. Auburn soccer also returned home and got a big win over Florida Gulf Coast, 5-0, and that was the last non-conference tilt of the season as it will go on the road to Ole Miss for its SEC opener. That's at 7:00 Central on Friday night. And then one other event going on Friday night, this is back to volleyball, 6:00 Central against Florida State inside Neville Arena. So a big way to start off the weekend before football gets back underway. Cross country will be in Huntsville for the Southern Showcase on Friday as well. But hey, even there's fall golf getting underway, fall tennis getting underway. So much going on in the world of Auburn athletics that you can keep up with on the Auburn Tigers app as well as auburntigers.com.
And tonight is Tiger Talk over on Wings 94.3. Live on location again tonight, Hillman?
That's right. Baumhauer's Victory Grill on Bent Creek Road. Hugh Freeze, Mike Blanc, and Connor Liu joining us on Wings 94.3 FM at Baumhauer's Victory Grill starting at 6:00 Central. And again, so much to come after. You know, it was a great Tiger tailgate show on Saturday honoring Coach Pat Guy and talking with some of those guys that played and coached under him. We'll have more great guests on the Tiger Tailgate Show coming up this Saturday, beginning at 9 a.m. Central on the east side of Jordan-Hare Stadium. So looking forward to that, to kicking off for homecoming here in Auburn. And we'll have all that coverage right here right over on Wings 94.3 FM.
Maybe you want to set a few extra alarms on Saturday, Jacob, so you get up and make sure you're there in plenty of time.
I think that's a good idea, as it's going to be an early, early morning for everyone working that game. But that's what it's all about, man, as we really get this season kicked off right before SEC play.
Man, we appreciate your time as always. We always look forward to talking with you on Mondays, getting your thoughts and your recap on Auburn football and everything else going on around Auburn athletics. Jacob Hillman with the Auburn Sports Network. Check him out. And again, we're just so happy to be partnered with you guys and looking forward to Tiger Talk tonight over on Wings 94.3. My man, have a fantastic rest of your week, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Jacob. Thanks, Christian. We really appreciate the partnership as well. And we'll talk again next Monday, hopefully after another win in Jordan-Hare Stadium. War Eagle.
Thanks so much. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Appreciate him as always. Look forward to our conversations, and I know we appreciate his friendship as well. We'll take our final break here on the Monday edition of On the Line. We'll come back and wrap it all up on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today, man. If you missed any of it, you can always go back, catch up with the podcast on our station website, ESPNAU.com, or you'll find it wherever you get your podcast. We've talked about Auburn Ball State. We've talked about week two of the of the college football season. Christian had an emotional conversation with you on the AP poll, and then we just talked to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network about his thoughts of Auburn and Ball State as well. And so if you missed any of that, again, go back to our station website or wherever you get your podcast, but ESPNAU.com is the place to go.
Talking tomorrow's show, have a little bit more insight on South Alabama. Auburn opened up as 24.5-point favorites against that team. We can talk about how that could be scary for some. How it, we hope it's not too scary, but a lot
of
people
gave Tulane everything they wanted.
I was going to say, and a lot of teams have kind of, or a lot of people have kind of circled this game as that possible trap game for the Auburn Tigers. Right, it's that 11:45 kick. It's right before you go on the road to begin SEC play. You really hope not, but we'll be able to talk about that tomorrow. We'll be able to dive a little bit more into more of the SEC games. The Auburn-Oklahoma game was announced earlier this afternoon. That's going to be an incredible game. 2:30 Central Time over on ABC. And so that will be a very, very fun game.
I think that is a pretty good draw for Auburn.
Yes.
I think that's a pretty good draw.
The fact, too, I was thinking about that when I first saw it. It sucks the fact that you have to say it like this, but it's nice the fact that national media is willing to put Auburn in a slot like that, which is what you're referring to. The fact that Auburn's now seen as, okay, whoever they're playing, it's Jackson Arnold's return. This team is going to be good. Let's put them on that, not quite the prime time slot, but one of those slots that everybody's going to be watching.
I was saying more so the fact that it's not a pure night game in Norman.
Oh, I agree with that.
I'm saying Auburn got a pretty good draw in terms of not having to go under the lights at night. All of that mess.
I agree with that as well, but I also think the other part stands true.
I agree with that.
It's not the 7:45 SEC Network game.
Yeah, I was trying to look and see. They haven't announced a ton of the other game times that week. There's some really fascinating games that week.
They did release them.
Illinois-Indiana's that week, which will be a top 20 matchup probably. That's Florida-Miami that week. South Carolina-Missouri is that week. Tulane goes to Oxford. Texas Tech and Utah is a top 25 matchup right now. Looking in here a little bit more. Anybody else that's fascinating?
Here we go. I have all of the SEC games for
Auburn and Oklahoma is one of the better games of the week.
It is. It's no doubt. You have Arkansas-Memphis. That is
could be interesting.
12. That's 11 a.m. Central Time on either ABC or ESPN. You have UAB in Tennessee, which nobody will pay too much attention about. You have Tulane going to Ole Miss. That's the 3. That's the 2:30 ESPN game.
Mississippi State. The Auburn game's on ABC, right?
Yes. Mississippi State and Northern Illinois. Nobody cares about South Carolina and Missouri. That is 7:30 on ABC. So that's the game that will follow Auburn and Oklahoma. Florida Miami is also at 7:30. That's either ASPN or ESPN, ABC or ESPN. I guess those two games are trying to be decided. Vanderbilt is hosting Georgia State, which that could be a fun game since Georgia State beat Vanderbilt last year. And then you have Southeast Louisiana and LSU and Sam Houston and Texas. And so not as big of a slate, but still what could be a really, really fun game.
Yeah, I think so. And again, I think Auburn dodged a bullet of having to go at night to Norman. I would have liked the 11 a.m., but that's from a viewership standpoint, mid-afternoon's good. I mean, that'll be good. The hype will be around that game. You don't need any more. It will be there by the time those two teams hit the field in Norman coming up next week. So, yeah, we'll talk some more about that tomorrow. Also, confirmation on Lee Scott, coach. Yeah. We'll get one of them on to talk about the Warriors starting 1-0 in region play. Samson High School football talk in there. And kind of more reactions to week two. Deeper dive into Auburn Ball State a little bit more about why the score was good, but the stats were gooder is what we'll talk about tomorrow. Woo! So that's going to be fun. So that's tomorrow here on the show. Wednesday will be Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 as we get to talk about the biggest game in the SEC up to this point, Georgia and Tennessee coming up this weekend. We'll also have Daryl Dapperidge, Double D, who we got to see on Saturday. Always love seeing him and get his thoughts on Auburn versus Ball State. Start to preview South Alabama a little bit. See if Daryl's any nerve, or has any nerves or any nervousness for the Jaguars of South Alabama this weekend. So that'll be on Wednesday. Thursday, will be loaded per usual. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. We'll talk to Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. We'll have Coach Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School Football as well. Will join us on Thursday, and then a free-for-all Friday. So it's a jam-packed week once again, and we love that you're here and appreciate you being a part of it. So we're back tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of On the Line, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.